Disassociation, Part 2. 38 years have passed since that fall day when I attempted to wrangle some information from my mom for a paper I was writing on her residential school experience. In all the time since then, she never once said a word to me or my 13 siblings about her internment at the Mohawk Institute. There was a sense of urgency deep inside me that increased every year in April as she celebrated another birthday. As she got older and was subsequently diagnosed with diabetes, high blood pressure, and congenital heart failure, my anxiety grew. The fear of losing her far outweighed the fear of losing the opportunity to ever hear her story. I wanted so much to sit with her and hear her open up about everything she held so close to her vest. Being open and vulnerable was not an emotional state my mother could handle. My mom died on October 18, 1986, at 60 years of age, far too young. I grieved her loss and felt it was my fault because I was not there to get her to the hospital in time. I now realize that was naive thinking on my part, but at the time I thought I could have changed the outcome. I miss having her in my life. On so many mornings, I wish that I could have one more day or even one more hour with her. The pain of her death has lessened over the years. However, the loss of never hearing all that she held inside and so fiercely protected never seems to fade. After my mom died, I wanted to know more about what her life was like. I talked to her sisters and heard stories that offered me some insight into who she was. But these stories weren't in her voice. They were secondhand. It wasn't her words that I was hearing, and it felt lacking. I did have an opportunity to speak to other survivors who were there at the mush hole at the same time she was. Jesse Miracle and Rita Joseph are just two. I was told my mother was fluent in Mohawk and knew some Cayuga as well when she first arrived at the mush hole at the age of 8 or 9. When she finally was released at the age of 16, she never, ever spoke another word of her first language that I heard. Perhaps she did it in secret, but I never knew if she could still speak it. Whatever happened to her during those years remained locked deep within the recesses of her mind, hidden so far away, not only from me, but maybe even from herself. I am still not sure who she was protecting more, herself or me, by not disclosing all the traumas she had experienced and witnessed. I'll never know what was inflicted upon her during her confinement. I do know that she and Jesse enlisted in the armed services together after leaving the mush hole. When my mom died in 1986, my son Jordan was only 3 years old. She had been his primary caregiver while I went to work at the University at Buffalo. I could always tell where my mother had spent her day by looking to see where Jordan's toys were strewn about on the floor. If she had been beating all day at the dining room table, then all his toys would be around her chair. If it was not a day for beating, but instead for napping, relaxing, and watching TV, then all his toys would be by the couch or her rocking chair. Often after her death, Jordan would ask for his gram. He wanted to know when she would be back. He would climb onto my lap as he cried for her. The day after her funeral at Six Nations, we traveled back to our homestead at Tuscarora in New York. We woke up and he came to me and told me that he could see Grandma sitting in her rocking chair. I wasn't surprised at his statement, nor did it worry me. In our culture, it is said that those closest to birth and death have an affinity to see spirits who have not yet crossed over. He no longer asked about her whereabouts, and his toys were often scattered around her chair again. When Jordan was 17, a senior at Niagara Wheatfield High School, he wrote a poem about his Duda, Hazel, for his writing class. When I first read it, tears welled up and fell from my eyes as I thought again about all my mom had endured at the mush hole. Mush hole. Little Indian girl on a train to a school, so far, far away from the land of her life's blood. I am with her, and I am her, as are countless others on a train to a school filled with notions of civilizations and the sorrows of many nations, with secret meetings and closets, so we could talk that tongue that is our life's blood, so we could hold that dream in our hands of growing up free. But it was all overshadowed by civilization and brutal beatings and things we couldn't understand. Grandma never spoke those life-giving words ever again, nor have I. Jordan Welby Stiers, 2000.